The Apostle Paul wrote in Ephesians 6:10 to be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might so we can stand in the evil day. Let me ask you, are you standing strong in the Lord and in the power of His might? Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network and the American Pastors Network, agreeing with the Apostle Paul that when the days are evil, we need God's armor. To modern culture, right is wrong and wrong is right. Good is evil and evil is good. The war against God, the truth, and God's people was started by the devil and is in full swing. The Bible tells us that all who will live godly in Christ Jesus will be targeted and will suffer persecution in the spiritual war. So what must we do? Put on the whole armor of God. Imagine, God designed armor to help us in the spiritual battle and available to us. In the next few weeks, we'll look at this armor of God and what it's for and why we'd better put it on. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, asking you, did you put on God's armor today? Are you even in the battle?
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
This is Jacques with Pet Chat. Diane's not here today. She has a sick dog. And, of course, she has priorities, and her priority is to make that dog well. So, anyway, we are here. We have a special guest. And before we get into that, just give you my quick background here with Soph and Bean Pet Care. Sophie being my 22-year-old cat, and Jilly Bean being my 6-year-old, so Soph and Bean Pet Care. We cover the King of Prussia area and surrounding King of Prussia, and we do dog walks and take care of pets when folks are on vacation, do overnights, special overnights when people are out of the country, watch their house and watch their pets as well. So anyway, we are available at www.sophandbeanpetcare.com. So, we have a special guest. This is Deb Kirshner, and Deb has a company. It's called Canine Jym, J-Y-M, and it's the largest outdoor climate-controlled dog facility for training dogs. And welcome, Deb.
Why, thank you, Jock. Just to let you know, Canine Jym is actually an indoor facility.
Correct, so, right,
yeah.
Right.
Okay, you said outdoor.
Oh, I was reading indoor. But said outdoor, so I apologize.
That's
so
okay.
why don't you first off just tell us a little bit about this facility?
Okay. Well, back in 2008 was when I first opened. One of the reasons I opened was that I had adopted a really, really tough dog to work with, and it was beyond my skill set and my capability for knowing how.
Right.
And after I started to get the education and the information that I needed to help be positive and retrain this dog and help her come out of her shell, I said, boy, it would be really nice if I could start a center that was based on positive motivation training and get her the help that she needs and get me the education that I need.
Right.
So that is really where the idea came from. And I opened my doors in 2008. We're located on Route 309 in Colmar. And our training facility has grown to 18,000 square feet.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
So it's kind of a big place, and it's kind of interesting because we do all types of dog training.
Now, how many trainers do you have beside yourself?
I would say probably around 12 or 13.
Oh, wow. So now you train 7 days or 6 days, 5 days a week?
We are literally open 7 days a week.
Okay.
We run most of our classes are in the evenings, obviously, when people get off work.
Sure.
So our busiest times are usually between 6 and 10 at night, Monday through Thursday. And then, of course, on Friday night, nobody wants to come out and play because they all want to go out and
sure.
do other stuff with their friends. But that's actually our right. fly ball night. And fly ball is like a whole different culture.
Now, new to me. So explanation, please. What is fly ball?
Fly ball is literally a doggy relay race. It consists of a 4-dog team.
Okay.
And a 51-foot length of track that has 4 small hurdles placed 10 feet apart.
All right. So sort of what you see on TV with these dogs doing, going through
that's a different
caves and
right,
things?
That's a different sport. That's agility.
Oh, okay.
So there's actually many different dog sports. And quite honestly, when I opened in 2008, the only one that I knew of was agility. And I had to be educated after the fact, after I opened.
Okay. And how to make up the track and then...
And who's going to teach it? And
right, and then you
else.
Have to train the dogs to do it, right?
Yes, yes.
How long does it take So you take a dog who's never been on a track. How old is the ideal age first?
You can start a dog into dog sports at just about any age. You can start from 10 weeks of age. Obviously, you want to take into consideration the fact that they're still growing and how hard it might be to put them into a competitive situation.
Right.
But you can literally start training and conditioning the dog to understand that these jumps aren't scary, that this box is kind of cool, that balls are kind of fun, and it's all in the conditioning.
Now, do you have like a treat at the end of each part of this trail, so they know if they go down this one ramp, they're going to get a little treat,
yes.
and then you got them going down that one, and then you add another one and a little treat or something like that?
Yep, exactly. So what we do is we break everything down into really small pieces.
Right, okay.
And we start to build the small pieces until we get height and distance and speed and accuracy and desire. It's actually the other way around. We call it dash, desire, accuracy, speed. It becomes a habit.
Wow. So if you're doing this and you're training, say, a dog to do it for the first time, and now you've completed the track and they're running the whole 9 yards, how long did that take?
Well, a lot of that depends on the dog. If the dog is really open to new ideas and has a really good attitude, and the handler has a really good attitude, it can take as little as 7 weeks for a dog to literally learn all of the little skills that make up the game.
But that's still, that's a considerable amount of time.
Well, that's 1 hour a week.
1 hour.
So in seven hours.
So you'll take them 1 hour a week, and they'll remember last week's training?
Sure. Well, just like a dog, once you teach a dog sit, and you go up to them and you say sit, they you don't have to retrain them again. They know it. They do
it. Now, is it a matter of breed that some are quicker than others, like a small dog? I always see these small dogs running around these tracks. I don't generally see big dogs, but is it easier for one breed of dog over another or no?
Yes and no. Obviously, if you're trying to get a dog to go over a 12-inch wide dog walk that's 40 feet long, obviously a miniature poodle isn't going to have a problem with something that's 12 inches wide, whereas a Great Dane might take a little bit more control and coordination to be able to keep his 4 feet underneath him so that he can move across that 12-inch board that's 40 feet long and 4.5 feet off the ground.
Right, right.
So, yes, there is a difference between the dogs. But, again, just like anything else, with conditioning and training, like any athlete, we're not all designed to be, you know, Olympic skiers.
Yeah, sure.
Yet, with the training and the conditioning, some of us end up that way.
Right. Well, that's great. Okay, so you've got that going. And you've got your trainers. So tell me some of the skills that you teach dogs, other than, you know, this. What's the name of the race again?
The relay race is flyball.
Flyball, okay.
And the tunnels and the jumps and the hoops and the dog walks is agility.
Okay, agility.
Something Westminster just highlighted just in the last couple of years.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't even know they did. I thought they just had, you know, trot around.
They always did, and I think it was this year was the second year in a row that they started highlighting agility as part of Westminster, and that was really a big deal in the dog community.
Now, you think they're going to add flyball as maybe a third?
I think they may. You know, we'll see what happens over time. You never know.
Yeah,
that's the cool thing about growth.
Now, when you take a dog, say I have a dog, what's the ideal age if I want all the, you know, typical training to be done for my dog? So he'll heal, or maybe a walk next to him. I guess that's healing, right?
That is healing, yep.
So what's the typical age to start a dog with at?
Usually as early. If you get a puppy that's 10 weeks old, from the first day that dog comes into your house, every moment that you have with them is a training opportunity to condition them for the different types of skills that are going to be what I call lifestyle skills. Walking with me nicely on a leash. Coming when they're called. Those are all what I consider lifestyle skills.
Is that also what you call positive motivation?
Positive motivation is the way in which I go about getting those things to happen.
Okay.
So if my dog makes a mistake, I don't yell at them and say, no, you made a mistake. I don't want to highlight that. I actually want to highlight the positive side in getting what I want.
Right, the positive part that they did, like good dog.
They're still going to make mistakes because they're learning just like we are.
And again, at the end of each, say you teach them to sit, you give them a little treat? Are they always treats or pats on the head? Or what, from your side, do you typically
do? Okay. From the positive motivation standpoint, I say that anytime my dog is doing something good, the first thing they're going to get from me is me. They're going to get my smile, my praise, and my attention. Wow, you're a good dog.
Right.
Occasionally, and more often in the beginning, I want to make a connection between hearing good dog and that praise and getting my relationship. And then I'm going to back that up with something that they probably think is nice, like a little cookie.
Right. Okay.
Or perhaps a toy if I know that it's a favorite toy. So I use, what I do is I start to insert me in between the toy or the treat.
Right.
And then hearing good dog and getting that smile is usually a predictor that something else good might happen. So I'm setting up sort of like a lottery ticket sort of situation. Mm-hmm. And it may be a winning ticket. The winning ticket is that I actually get a cookie or a treat.
Right.
But it still pays off to get the lottery ticket because it may be a big winner.
Right. Now, are trainers interchangeable? So what you say to the dog and the positive reinforcement that you give the dog and the positive motivation can be interchanged with, say, I come on and I'm one of the other trainers.
Absolutely.
Okay. And so it's all interchangeable. It's just the words and the actions and your hand motions, et cetera.
Right. Right.
Cool.
That we all learn how to speak to a dog in a way that's positive and motivating, and that helps them to want to do more. And just because I do it doesn't mean that you can't do it, and you should be able to do it. I try and get all of the people who come to me with their dogs to say, I can get your dog to do this. If I can get your dog to do it, so can you, and you can probably do it better than I can.
So typically, what's the first thing you train a dog to do? Sit?
Well, actually, the first thing that we train a dog to do is actually give us their attention, because unless we have their attention, it's very hard to get them to do anything else. So that's really the very first thing, is to focus on me.
Right.
Because if you were over there standing in the corner looking at whatever, and I was to say, sit, you might not even realize I was addressing you.
Correct.
Well, the first thing I'd want you to do is turn around and look at me, and then I might say to you, smile and say sit, and if you knew what it meant, you would.
So would you start with their name, Fido? Sit, Fido, to get their attention.
And then I would actually reward for getting attention before I would even go on to the next exercise. So I would break it down into a really small piece. And first, you look at me.
Sure.
Wow, really good dog. Nice, good dog. Then I can start working on the next part.
Okay. And in now you say you do an hour session. We'll talk about that coming up after the break.
Great.
But thanks for tuning in to Pet Chat. AM 1180 WFYL. And everybody having a ball. Until the fellas start the name calling. And the girls respond to the call. I have a poor one shout out. Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
Hello, this is Paul Fisher, headmaster of Coventry Christian School in Pottstown. I am so pleased that WFYL is a growing part of our community, serving as a voice of reason and a defender of and proponent for all that has made and will make America a great nation. There simply are not enough competing voices and ideas in the media, and we are proud to partner with WFYL in working for your liberty and things that truly matter. Advertising on WFYL has served us well and opened doors of opportunity for expanding our mission in classical Christian education. And the good people at the station have been so kind to help us network as well. I hope you will faithfully tune in to WFYL, share this station with others, and consider how a partnership with your organization or business could strengthen our community and build a stronger America.
Stand in the Gap Weekend with Sam Rohr and Gary Dull of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network features a message from one of the nearly 3,000 church leaders that are members of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network. The mission is to build a permanent network of pastors across the state that are dedicated to affirming the authority of Scripture and taking seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Every day, we're working to impact the nation's values by encouraging pastors to lead their churches in addressing today's toughest issues, including the deterioration of traditional marriage, pornography, sexual permissiveness, and abortion. You're invited to join us in the battle for truth.
Airing Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. and streaming Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. on our website, 1180wfyl.com.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America. You're listening to WFYL 1180, working for your liberty and things that matter. Thanks for listening.
My name is Nancy Becker, and I am your Recorder of Deeds here in Montgomery County. It's very important for the veterans to be aware that they should record their DD-214 or military discharge in the Recorder of Deeds office. This is important because when a veteran passes, the funeral director will usually contact the Recorder of Deeds office so that they can arrange for a military funeral. And this relieves the burden of family members of trying to find this very important document. But the most important reason is that we are now issuing a veteran's photo ID card that entitles the veterans to discounts and incentives from nearly 400 businesses here in Montgomery County. All the veteran has to do is come into the Recorder of Deeds office at 1 Montgomery Plaza in Norristown. Parking is always free for our veterans. You just come into the parking garage and tell them you're a veteran and you can park free of charge. Bring along your DD-214 and a photo ID. We'll issue you the veteran's photo ID, give you a list of the businesses that are participating. It takes about 10-15 minutes at the most, and this way you will be receiving these discounts. The incentive for the business to do this is we advertise your business free of charge. My website gets about 1,000 hits a week, so the potential for over 1,000 people of seeing your business is there. Also, every veteran gets a list of all the businesses participating. They get it when they come into the office, and we email them to them every 3 to 4 weeks so that the veteran is aware of the new businesses we have. Veterans of Montgomery County, please come into our office. It would be my honor to shake your hand and thank you for your service to our country.
Okay, this is Jacques, and you're listening to Pet Chat, and we're here with Deb Kirshner, a fantastic dog trainer. Now, I understand that the old myth of you can't teach an old dog new tricks is a fallacy. Is that correct?
It is a big fallacy. Otherwise, rescue groups would be pointless.
Well, why don't you give me an example?
For example, if somebody gave me a dog a few years ago, and the reason that they gave him to me at 7 years old was because they said that he could not be walked on a leash.
What do you mean he couldn't be walked on a leash?
It meant that if you tried to put him on a leash and take him out for a walk, he would run to the end of that leash with the voracity of Wile E. Coyote trying to chase Roadrunner. And he would pull so hard with all of his might, well, the lady that used to own him, she would just give up and let go of the leash, and then he'd be free. Okay. So he learned that if I pull really, really hard, my cookie is I get free.
Oh, he's going to have freedom.
Uh-huh. That's a pretty strong cookie.
So his job was to run as fast as he could so the person holding the leash would let it go and he'd have freedom.
Exactly. Exactly.
So how'd you teach this old dog new tricks?
Well, the first day I met him and I brought him home, I put him on a leash and he got out of the car and he saw something that he wanted to go to and he started to run like for the hills.
Right.
And he got to the end of his leash and I saw what was happening, so I steadied myself and he hit the end of that leash and just like in a Roadrunner cartoon, he recoiled and sort of bounced backwards.
Right, hung himself out to dry.
At which point he turned, he got up and he kind of turned and looked back over his shoulder at me like, what was that all about?
You're and still there.
And I just didn't say anything. I just smiled when he looked at me and I said, there you go, that's a good boy.
Right.
So he started to walk back to me. And as soon as he got back to me, he said, now let me see if this is going to work. Let me try this again because it's always worked in the past. And so he went right back out to the end of that leash, just as hard with the same result.
Right.
By the third time, he started saying, maybe I shouldn't be running so fast to the end of this leash because it doesn't feel so nice.
So how'd you get him to go ahead and walk slowly with you?
Well, actually, most of it was patience. I waited him out. I waited until he started to actually move slower.
Right.
And then I tried taking one step And with that one step, he went right back to the behavior that he knew so well for 7 years. Okay, she's moving. Let's crank it up and let's go run it off again.
Interesting.
The first three steps took a really long time. First three steps that we did our first walk together took probably close to 45 minutes, and at the end of it, the two of us were exhausted.
Right. And I bet people that knew the habits of this dog who saw him after you trained it were amazed.
They were. People look at that dog today and they say, which is the dog you have that couldn't be walked on a leash? And I say, this one.
So you can teach an old dog new tricks.
You can teach an old dog new tricks, but you can't teach Madonna to act.
Oh, there we go. So your facility. Let's talk a little bit about it. You say throughout the year you have multiple events going on.
Oh, yes. We always have things going on the weekends, whether they're small trials, which are local agility events so that people can come out and play with their dogs and earn titles and get ribbons and work up the various venues type of ladders for success.
Right.
But we also have people, specialists, come in from all over the country to teach about higher levels of dog training or add new information that helps reinforce the things that we already know.
Now, you bring in a lot of people?
Ideas. Yeah. A few weeks ago, we brought in Denise Fenzi from San Francisco. Okay. And last weekend, we brought in Forrest Mickey from Wisconsin. Two big dog trainers, very positive. They also don't believe that you should ever really come down hard on your dog, because if you're trying to get your dog to do something to you and you give him a hard time, he's going to say, well, why should I want to be with you in the first place?
Right, I don't like you.
Yeah, it's easy for me. Hey, if you're going to make it hard on me, why don't I just go lay on the couch and eat bonbons and do my own thing?
So you've had up to like 70, 90 folks at a time there?
For Forrest, we had about 70 people coming and auditing, and we had about 10 working teams. And when Denise Fenzi was here, she actually showed up with a group of five other instructors, including herself. And it was like a weekend. They called it Ferret Palooza, and we had six of some of the best trainers in the country coming and doing. We had about 250 people and about 50 working teams.
And what kind of training events do they have?
Well, usually when these people come in, they try and do non-specific type of training, because people come from all different kinds of sports backgrounds.
Right.
People from agility, people from flyball, people from sport obedience, people from field hunting, people from skajoring. I mean, there's all different types of games and training that we do. So they want to be sort of generic and just work on the quality of the relationship.
Now, are all these folks bringing their own dogs to work with, as opposed to you having a whole slew of dogs that need to be trained?
No.
And these different people train them?
No, the people who come in with the working teams, they are a dog owner. That would be like you bringing your dog in.
Okay.
Or you bringing your dog in. And you would come and you would pay for the seminar and you would be one of the working teams and you would have the opportunity to work one-on-one with these people and help tweak some of the aspects of your relationship and your training to try and make it be more beneficial and have more meaning.
Gotcha. Now, these dogs obviously like the games aspect of these events.
But shouldn't life always be about fun and games?
Fun and games. The more fun, the better for the dogs and for the humans, I bet.
Absolutely, because if you're frustrated in what you're doing, obviously you're not going to be having fun doing it and you're going to feel bad about it, and that's going to translate to the dog, who are very intuitive about how we feel. I know that whenever I get into a heated debate with my husband, usually we look around and all the dogs are hiding under chairs, because they feel the stress in our tone of voice when we're having an argument.
No, that is so true. And they, and on the other hand, they know when you're sick.
Yes,
and they know when to comfort you. I had a dog for 14 years, Pal, and any time I was sick, he would just lay with me, and you know, he just knew that I needed something. And besides maybe some hot broth or something, that dog was so comforting, and I think in a lot of cases made me well quicker.
Well, absolutely. I mean, they've done studies on, there's empirical evidence that when you're petting a dog, it helps lower your blood pressure, lower your heart rate, and increase the quality of your mood.
I believe it. Getting off the dog subject just for a second, my mother-in-law was at a facility. She had a broken hip. And I brought in Sophie. Brought her in a little bag.
Sure.
Her head was sticking out of the bag. She loves to travel in this bag. And as I'm walking through the facility to Carolyn's room, all the people that were there, it was like they were uplifted immediately. Mm-hmm. I saw smiles, and the nurses said, oh, can you bring Sophie back another time?
Right.
People love to have cats, and I've understood that they've had dogs at these facilities, permanent dogs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of therapy groups out there. Comfort Care and Canines is a big organization out of Lansdale that does a lot of their – I actually host them and volunteer my space and my facility to them so that they can do their testing and their orientation for their new clients and the new teams that want to come on and do therapy.
Now, you mentioned that one of the events that you do is a New Year's Eve event. What's that all about?
We actually host a big New Year's Eve trial where we have dinner and an agility trial. And generally, we have it themed. Like one year, we did a pajama party. And if people come into the facility and they come in their pajamas, we actually have a special event that night that sort of caters to them for having had the audacity to come and fun and play.
In pajamas now, how many of them bring their dogs in pajamas?
Some of them actually do put their dogs in pajamas, and I would say probably half of them do.
I want to be there. I want to take a picture of this.
You're welcome. We love to have spectators.
Oh, it sounds great. Well, this segment has gone awfully quick, and we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back and learn a little bit more about Deb. So stick around, folks. We'll be back to AM 1180 WFYL. This is Pet Chat.
Hi, everybody. Phil Valentine here. It's great to be back on the air in Philly, and especially when my show is being broadcast from the Cradle of Liberty, Valley Forge area, home of freedom-loving patriots both in times past and today, right here on WFYL 1180 AM.
1, 2, 3.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gossett, inviting you to join me for Backstage Jazz. I'll spend an hour each week taking you behind the music and into the lives of America's top jazz musicians. Experience live jazz music and connect with the artists through backstage interviews. Join us right here for this season of Backstage Jazz. Broadcasting Saturday afternoon at 4 and streaming Sunday night at 6 on WFYL.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
If you like Car Talk, catch Under the Hood, Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 to 7. Exclusively streaming on 1180WFYL.com. Worldwide on your computer or mobile device. Stream Under the Hood this Saturday morning from 6 to 7 at 1180WFYL.com or on your favorite mobile device. Go to our website at 1180WFYL.com to find out more.
Hi, friends. Janet Parshall here, host of In the Market with Janet Parshall. I'm excited about partnering with 1180 AM WFYL to bring you a fast-paced conversation every Sunday. As you listen to In the Market, we'll examine major news stories and issues, equipping you to be bold when voicing truth in a confused and chaotic culture. I look forward to engaging my new friends at 1180 AM WFYL every Sunday at 12:05 p.m. on In the Market.
Hey, everybody, this is Laura Ingram. Thanks for listening to my show and the other great programs carried live on WFYL 1180 AM, broadcasting from the historic Cradle of Liberty area, Valley Forge and Philadelphia.
Hello, this is Jacques, and this is Pet Chat. Diane's off today. She has a sick dog, as I mentioned at the beginning. So welcome back. And we have Deb, and we've been talking about her facility and training. How about young ones, puppy training and the like?
Okay.
How's that go?
Well, at Canine Gym, we actually have every Thursday afternoon, we do puppy social hour. And we break it into two different ages. We have 10 weeks to 5 months. And then for the second hour, we have 5 months to a year old. We don't do anything beyond a year old. And in these sessions, we have someone who is like an official, who is an officiator. And she's there mostly to just observe and monitor the behavior of the puppies to make sure that the puppies that are maybe a little shy don't feel that maybe the bolder puppies are picking on them.
Right.
The people who bring their puppies get to just sort of observe what is going on, because sometimes the best way to learn is through observation.
Now, how many puppies do you have in a pen at one time?
Typically, this puppy socials generate anywhere between 2 and 10 puppies. And
okay.
It depends on the week and what's going on and what the weather is like, because you do it as a drop-in.
Right. And you say up till 5 months, so you have some big puppies interacting with little ones.
Yes, Jack. Some of them are. But what we do is dogs, regardless of size, when they're in certain age groups, they still have similar tendencies.
Right.
Just like children go through phases, and it doesn't matter whether you have a really big kid or a really little kid, they're still in that same developmental phase. So
right,
their behaviors are kind of the same.
Okay.
And that is why usually once a dog hits 5 months, we say that is an adolescent period, and they typically get a little bit more rowdy and a little bit more difficult to control because they've learned how to say, no, I don't think so.
And now, are they just sort of puppy playing with each other, or can you control their activities at that young age?
We do both. What we do is we let them have some free play, where if they're going to chase each other around or roll around and wrestle on the floor, we let them do that. But we also have other toys and enrichment things out that actually give us the opportunity to interact and work with the dog, like rolling a ball and having them follow it, or having a tennis ball, or having a tug toy, or a skateboard.
Now, when you have like 5 or 6 dogs plus, do you have, like, you roll a ball and you'll get a couple of them to react to that where the other ones are still playing around?
Exactly.
And you don't try to get them all to do things in unison, because that's impossible.
Not
with
at
puppies.
All. What we do is we try and find the ones that are interested, we invite them to come and play.
Right.
If there's ones that aren't interested, fine. If they want to sit and watch and think about it for a couple of minutes, and maybe they want to get involved later, and that by the time they might want to get involved, the ones that were gung-ho in the beginning, they might be sort of getting bored at this time, and they're ready to fall off and do something else.
Right.
So it works out kind of interesting to watch, and it's always a cycle.
Now, when your next group with your 5 month or 6 month old,
Until a year.
Up until a year.
Yep.
Now, is that a different type of training? How's that evolve?
Usually the tone and the energy from the five-month-old to a year is usually a little bit higher energy, because the dogs are now starting to feel their oats and they're starting to assert themselves. So you usually have to get them to take more breaks to kind of settle down and reset their nervous systems, you know, shake it off and take a break.
Are they more isolated, like more one-on-one as opposed to in that same 5 or 6 dog group?
It depends. I mean, we still get the same number of dogs. We still might get 5 to 10 puppies coming in.
Right.
But the more puppies we have, the more rambunctious they tend to get. So we end up taking more little breaks and timeouts, where we're trying to interject ourselves to say, you know, just take a break. And as soon as the dog takes a break and responds to us, which is part of our training with them, respond to me, please.
Right.
Then you can go back to what you're doing. So the reward is take a break. Your reward is go have the cookie, go play with the other dogs again.
And that's same thing with the 5 month to year old. Same thing, except you get them, I guess, to react a little bit more often.
Yes. What we do is we insert ourselves a little bit more so that the energies don't get too high, because during that time, usually dogs' hormones are starting to come out and they're starting to feel their oats, and the boys act more like boys.
Right. Now, is all of the activity and all of your events and everything, and your, again, because it's an inside facility, do you do any outside training?
We really don't, because we really don't have an outside facility. However, a few times a year, we're fortunate enough to be invited by other activities to come out and and show training exercises. So that does give us an opportunity for people to go out and do their stuff outside, which, of course, is a whole new ball game.
Now, is that that John DeBella dog walk event?
The John DeBella dog walk is one of those big events where we get to come out and we do an agility demonstration, but we also do interactive games with the audience. We also do little demonstrations where then we take audience members to come in and try some of the beginning skills, such as our fly ball demo.
Right.
We show what the game of fly ball looks like, and then we might take five or six people from the audience and show them what their first class might be like and what type of skill they're going to learn in that first hour going towards learning how to play fly ball. And that is usually recall over those little fences.
Right, right.
And what we do is we set them up behind the first fence, which is 10 feet away, and we say, be really happy. Tell your dog you really want them and be really inviting, and we kind of hold their dogs back.
Right.
And because their dogs don't know us, they're going, I want to get away from you. So you let them go, and they spring forward toward their people, and their
right.
people are really happy, and the dog comes to them. And as soon as the dog gets there, give them a cookie, bring them back over the jump to me. Now go 20 feet away.
Now, one thing I haven't asked you about, I was at a dog show over in Oaks, and in a separate room, they had a pool, the
oh,
rectangular
yes.
pool, and these dogs were jumping.
Dock diving.
Okay, is that what it's called, dock diving?
That is the sport, yep.
Now, do you teach that?
Well, I don't have a pool yet. My big dream is that as I grow and get bigger, which I've been doing over the years, my hope has been to have a pool.
You're about 5'6", 5'7"?
I am about 5'7", yes.
Okay, you're not going to grow anymore.
My business.
But anyway, your business.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
So as Canine Gym grows,
cha-ching.
What we're going to do is we are going to bring a pool in. And although the dock that we need for dock diving is about 40 feet long.
And wow,
probably,
that long.
Yeah, we probably don't have that kind of space. It doesn't mean we can't teach the initial feeling of getting the dog to just jump off the dock into the pool and do
right.
some swimming and go after a toy.
So the longer the dock, obviously the faster the speed.
Absolutely.
So if they're just starting at like 5 or 10 feet, they're obviously not going to go very fast. But as you say, you're going to teach them to overcome their fear
exactly.
and just jump into the water.
Right. We're going to build their confidence. We're going to build their desire. We're going to build their speed.
Right.
And we're going to teach them that this is all about having fun, which is always my number one plan.
And talk about having fun. Dogs love water.
Most dogs do. Not all dogs. Some dogs actually need to be taught how to swim.
Really?
Really. Some dogs aren't sure. Very often, if you see a dog that's really splashing the surface of the water,
right.
they're not using their hind legs. So they're only getting half of the swimming power.
Okay.
As soon as they start to use their rear legs, they plane off like a boat. And now they go through the water nice and smooth and cruise.
Okay, so obviously I've learned a lot here today. But besides that, I thought if you just put a dog in the water, they're going to swim to shore. But that's not so, huh?
Some of them panic and they're not sure how. We even want to condition that. Whenever I bring a dog into the water, I want to let them come out as long as they're comfortable.
Right.
And as soon as I feel they've had enough, I turn them around and I encourage them to go back out of the water. And then I let them come back in again. And as they get more confident, they come out further, stay in longer. And then after they're with me just for a few minutes, I turn around and I encourage them to go back out of the water and just take a break.
Well, great. Well, these segments have gone awfully quick.
They really have.
They really have. We're going to, in our last segment, Deb, if you don't mind, we'd like to delve into your past.
Oh, boy.
All those secret areas that you've never told anyone, so might as well tell everyone on the radio.
I suppose.
To our thousands of listeners out there. So we're going to do one more segment. We're going to take a quick break. This is AM 1180 WFYL Pet Chat.
Who let the dogs out?
The Apostle Paul wrote in Ephesians 6:10 to be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might so we can stand in the evil day. Let me ask you, are you standing strong in the Lord and in the power of His might? Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network and the American Pastors Network, agreeing with the Apostle Paul that when the days are evil, we need God's armor. To modern culture, right is wrong and wrong is right. Good is evil and evil is good. The war against God, the truth, and God's people was started by the devil and is in full swing. The Bible tells us that all who will live godly in Christ Jesus will be targeted and will suffer persecution in the spiritual war. So what must we do? Put on the whole armor of God. Imagine, God designed armor to help us in the spiritual battle and available to us. In the next few weeks, we'll look at this armor of God and what it's for and why we'd better put it on. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, asking you, did you put on God's armor today? Are you even in the battle?
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
Hey, Grandma, can you help me with my Common Core lesson on the Constitution? But the only part we're reading in eighth grade is the preamble and the First Amendment. I wonder when we'll get to study the rest of it. Didn't you say our founding fathers were wise patriots and wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to protect our freedom? This Common Core book we're reading says our founding fathers were racist and they didn't think women or blacks should ever be allowed to vote. She says, we the people. Didn't really mean you and me, but some rich white guys. That just makes me feel terrible about our country. We need to change things.
Oh, honey, that's not true at all. Our country is the greatest country the world has ever seen, and our founding fathers worked hard to be fair to everyone. I'm going to call our school board and our state board of education and ask why they allow Common Core and this book in your school.
Call your representatives now and ask them to stop Common Core and restore local control. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message. Go to nopacommoncore.com or call 484-678-2236.
All right. I know this isn't any fun to talk about, but we should. So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Batteries?
Dead.
Great. Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
No. What about blankets?
We have an old towel.
Good enough. Cell phones?
May not work.
Emergency water?
Not a drop.
And what about food?
Nope.
Perfect. We all know where we're meeting if we're separated, yeah?
The library!
Aunt Joan's house.
The bus stop.
Great. And I'll be waiting here wondering where you all are. Sounds like we don't have a plan. Who's up for mini golf?
Winging it is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency. Who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
This is Jacques, and I'm back with Pet Chat. And we've been speaking here with Deb Kirshner, who has a indoor training facility, Canine Gym. And Deb, we're going to talk a little bit about you now, if you don't mind.
Oh, boy.
So where are you from?
I originally grew up in North Jersey in Livingston, so I'm a Jersey girl. Yeah, exit 145.
Okay, you're not part of the Housewives of New Jersey, are you?
Don't know anything about them.
Okay, that's a no. All right, so I grew up in New Jersey.
Uh-huh. I grew up in New Jersey, and I went to school at Ithaca College up in New York State.
Okay.
I originally started phys ed. I was in phys ed major.
Okay.
And I got out of it after 2 years. I took all the really cool sciences because I'm kind of a science geek.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that I didn't like little kids, and I really didn't like team sports. So why on earth would I want to be a gym teacher?
But you did like the science.
I did like the sciences.
So what'd you do then?
I went into business administration.
And that sounds kind of boring.
It was kind of boring, but I graduated with a business degree, which was kind of very utilitarian. It made a whole lot of sense.
Right. And helped you with this business.
It absolutely is helping me with this business right now. And then I decided I was going to go more geeky, and I went into the computer field. And I went and I became a software engineer. I was a programmer.
Oh, wow.
back in the days when we used binary code to program computers and...
you know, you say back in the day, but this phenomenon is so short-lived. I mean, it is...
Oh, it's scary.
It's transpired. What? So was that in the mid-80s or when was that?
That was in the early 80s.
Early 80s,
yeah.
Okay.
So after I graduated college in 81, I went back to school for computer engineering, and I did my first job at Babson College as a programmer. I lived in Massachusetts for a while because that was where it was all happening. You either were in Silicon Valley out in the on the West Coast, or you were up in the heart of tech in the Boston area.
Right.
So that's where I started.
It has truly gone so fast. I started in cable TV in 1983, and... at that time, MTV had just started, HBO had just started, ESPN mm-hmm. was entertainment sports network. It wasn't ESPN, it actually had a name.
Right.
And we were charging $4.25 for basic cable.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
And I had West Hollywood, West LA, Beverly Hills area, and we went up to $5, that 75-cent jump, and people were outraged and said, why should we pay $5 for something we could get for free?
Exactly.
And now it's $100.
Exactly, exactly.
So, okay, so tell us more about your journey.
After I left Boston, I actually moved out to Phoenix for a few years.
Okay.
And out there, I started a windsurfing company just for fun because I could. I couldn't find a job in tech.
Now, where in Phoenix do you windsurf?
Any place that builds a lake. They've got a bunch of canyon lakes where they backed up something like the Verde River.
Roosevelt Lake.
Exactly. Starting with Roosevelt out in Globe, there's about five canyon lakes. The closest into Phoenix is Saguaro.
Right.
And that's where I started windsurfing. But also there were a lot of small lakes that the hotels put in for.
Right.
The Clarion was a big one. That was a big resort that had a nice lake where I actually started teaching windsurfing on.
Up in the Superstitions?
That was in Scottsdale.
Okay.
In the Gulf area. So I did that for a while, and then I decided to move back east where I finally got a job back in the tech field.
Go ahead.
So I kind of bopped around there, and then my last job was out at a small company called Bell Labs out in Chicago, where I was working on an air traffic control system.
Right.
Talk about the ultimate video game, right?
That must have been interesting.
It was very interesting. It was a lot of fun. But it was a contract competition.
Right.
And we were in competition. It was Bell Labs against Harris Computer Corporation. And Harris ultimately won out. And at the end of the stint, when Harris won out, all of the contractors that were working on the job said, thanks a lot. We'll see you later. And I said, you know what? I've had about enough. I need to do something else.
Now, in your young background, before, as you're growing up, did you have a lot of pets?
And I did.
Did you like try to train them?
I did. I had when I was a really young kid. I was allergic to everything under the sun except for gerbils and fish.
So gerbils.
I had gerbils and fish.
Right.
And as I got older, I started horseback riding. And as I discovered, my parents discovered the beauty of allergy pills. I was able to have rabbits.
Okay.
And cats, and eventually at 13, I got my first dog. And everything that I worked with, I usually tried to train.
Right, so you did all your own training.
I did all my own training. Not all of it was great training, but it was still.
Now, did you read about doing different training and doing ideas, or do you just come up with it and it worked or it didn't work?
Well, mostly it worked or it didn't work, and it wasn't actually until recent history that I actually started reading and studying behaviorists and studying about the background and the science of dog training. And remember, I'm a science geek.
Right, right, right.
So this really hit me in the right spot. And then I ended up adopting a dog that was totally beyond my capability to know how to handle.
Why so?
She was very dog aggressive. She did things that didn't occur. She just didn't behave like other dogs.
What kind of dog was it?
She was an Australian Shepherd.
Okay.
And she was beautiful, but she was very, very hard to handle and very unpredictable. And she would attack other dogs. And she would attack other dogs with the tenacity and the desire to really do great bodily harm, which scared the life
but
out
Jesus,
of me.
Right.
It really did.
Right.
So, and I didn't know how to reach her because punishing her didn't seem to work.
Right.
And intuitively, it seemed like if I punished her, it would make her want to withdraw from me more.
Right.
And I didn't know how to reach her. And fortunately, by the grace of God, I was on a bulletin board and I was talking about the terrible problems I was having. And a couple of behaviorists who are highly paid professionals, where you pay like $150 for a half an hour of their time on the phone, they contacted me and said, let me help you as part of the rescue.
Right.
And they really started me on my path. That was really how I got going.
Now, you had mentioned in passing when we were off the air that you also, besides being a physical ed major, you're a runner.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And what got you into that?
Well, actually, I had a love-hate relationship with running most of my life until I was in my 40s. And at 47, I decided I wanted to do my first marathon. I have no idea why. I just thought it seemed like a good idea at the time.
And I did my first one at 43.
Good for you.
I started running when I lived in Minnesota. I was running with my neighbor because we were a little overweight. And we'd go out and we'd run a mile. Actually, we didn't know what we were running. We'd run for 15 minutes.
Right.
And then we'd run like three times a week. And then the next week, we'd run for 20 minutes. And we got up to 40 minutes, and he dropped out. And I saw in the newspaper that there were these runs that were an hour, 40 minutes.
Right.
I didn't know what they were, but they were 10Ks. So I started signing up for 10Ks, and I did a whole bunch of 10Ks. And a couple of guys in the group were joining a marathon group. It was called ALARC, American Lung Association Runners Group.
I've heard of it.
And so it was a 12-week course. Every week we ran a little bit more, and we did hills on Thursday and
right.
track on Tuesday and a long run on the weekend. And I did my first marathon at 4 hours and 12 minutes.
That's actually a great time.
Then I did 4 hours and 7 minutes later in that same year.
Oh, man, you're fast.
then I went to a trip I won in Hawaii, and I did, without any training or anything, 4 hours and 16 minutes. Then I broke my leg on mile 20 and hobbled in at 4 hours and 45 minutes.
And you still beat me by a long time.
And then I went to Chicago and did 4 hours or 3 hours and 50 minutes. And then I did another Chicago, 3 hours and 38 minutes. So those are my seven marathons.
Wow.
So tell me about yours.
Well, my first marathon was down in Florida. I did the Disney Marathon.
Oh, that's a fun one.
That is a fun one. And to me, it was all about seeing if I could do it to have fun. And I stopped and I got my picture taken with Goofy. And I got my, you know, when I came back to the Animal Kingdom, I made sure that, you know, I got to pet the goats and hold the birds and all that other cool stuff. And I finished my first marathon in, I think, 5 hours and 45 minutes.
Okay.
So I didn't even come close to breaking 4 hours. My best time is five hours and 36 minutes.
Oh, okay.
But that was when I did the Goofy Challenge, and I did the half marathon the day before.
Now, were you a distance runner in college, or were you like a half miler, or you weren't in track at all?
No, not at all. In fact, when I was in college, I was a smoker.
Oh, a smoker.
Yes, and I started running when I was working at Babson.
Then you really started smoking.
Then I was really smoking. But then as I got older, I kept trying to go back to running because I liked it, but I didn't like it. And if I had a cool group of running buddies,
right.
I would go out and run. But if my running buddies said, we're taking a break, I said, okay, that's fine, me too.
I think that's what helped me run faster and faster as I grew older is because I had a running club.
Right.
And we always ran together and we encouraged each other. It's tough when you're running by yourself.
Well, actually, once I started training for the marathon, I was always training with people and I always ran with other people. And then all of a sudden, I decided one day to go out just with one of my dogs and run.
Oh.
And I found out that I liked it even better. And that's when I think I really fell in love with running, because then it didn't matter if I didn't have a running partner. I would grab a dog and I would go out and run. And then eventually I went out running without the dog, and I did even better.
And I always ran with Chloe. Chloe was my running partner in Minnesota and in Texas. And she just trotted along with me. Because,
uh-huh.
you know, I didn't try to run fast with those runs. But running with a pet is so much fun.
It really was. And Nikki was one of my greatest running partners. And it was after she died, as much as my other dogs would love to run with me, I just can't seem to give up that position by my side.
Gave up the ghost. Well, it's been an extremely enjoyable hour, Deb. And
thank you.
I appreciate you coming in and telling us all about your training facility, Canine Gym. So all those out there that like Pet Chat, please tune us in next week at 5 minutes after 12, 1180 WFYL. And this is Jacques Schiller, and this is Pet Chat.
Thanks, Jacques. It's been
and
great
thank
being
you.
Here.
Thank you, Dan.
Really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate it.